Hey listeners, Lex on the Decks here. Before you get stuck into this episode of Hot Girls, I wanted to let you know about something else you may be interested in. Though Hot Girls in its podcast format isn't releasing new episodes any longer, if you head over to my Substack, which is lexonthedecks.substack.com, you'll find more interviews and insight on gender minority artists and how to overcome any barriers to entry. You'll also get the opportunity to sign up to my weekly newsletter, 5 Good Things. This is an email letter which will land in your inbox on Fridays, sharing 5 of my favourite cultural or creative discoveries of the week. You'll find all that on lexonthedecks.substack.com. Thank you, and I hope you enjoy this episode of Hot Girls.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Hot Girls podcast with me, Lex on the Decks. This week, I'm joined by Shay D, a London-based rapper whose recent release, Speaking in Tongues, reflects the development of an artist who's been bubbling and releasing and championing women in rap for time. Shay started in the spoken word space, running her own poetry nights. She also founded and led the first all-female UK hip-hop tour and is a champion for underrepresented voices in all spaces. She's genuinely so lovely, but also so creative and a hustler in the best sense of the word. Shay D on the Hot Girls podcast. Let's go.
Ladies, gentlemen,
listen up. You're listening to Hot Girls. With Lex on the Decks.
We in the mix.
It's fire.
Keep it going. We on fire.
From London for the world.
Let's go in.
I found it really therapeutic during lockdown. I was painting trainers and nails and like cups. I was just painting things.
Well, the first thing I wanted to ask you is, like, I get the impression from just the volume of your output and all the different areas that you've kind of worked in, that you are just one of those people who's just like very creative and constantly has ideas. And I was wondering if that's the case with writing, whether you are just someone who's constantly writing or whether your creative process is actually like you go in waves.
I am always writing because I like, it sounds so silly, I still have like have a diary. But yeah, I still like journal things. I'll write things down. I'll write bits of bars. Like, it's so interesting that you asked that because I kind of deep cleaned my room yesterday and I had boxes and boxes under my bed. And I read in this like feng shui book that you shouldn't have things under your bed. Like it should, like air should just flow through everything.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, I don't want to have all these boxes and stuff. So I started looking through literally all of yesterday. I was looking through, I have like filer faxes from like 2009. So I was looking of what I was doing on September 5th or whatever, 2009 and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, like I write a lot. There was about 7 boxes of just lyric books and diaries. So I do write a lot. But when I know I have to write for an album or like an EP or a project, it's really weird. It's like I go into this mode where it's almost like, you know, in school, you have to write an assignment for something or like an essay for something. It's a different type of writing that I do. And I actually don't prefer it. I like just writing bits and bobs of whatever rather than having to write for a project. If I'm doing an album and I've got like 5 grime, hype, kind of mad rap songs, I'll be like, oh, I need to mellow it down. So I need to write 3 mellow tunes now. And then it's almost like you have a template to do, but it almost becomes a bit forced. But I do actually just prefer just writing because I have been since I'm little. I was raised an only child. So until I was like 12 and then my dad had loads of other kids with like other people.
So when you were young, you were always like entertaining yourself essentially.
Literally. Like I had imaginary friends. I used to like really think that my like toys and stuff would come to life when I left the room. So I would place them in certain places and run back in to see if they moved. Like you literally do really weird things as an only child, and you do make up stories and write. I just guess you're just entertaining yourself nonstop.
Yeah. And it's interesting that thing you were saying about when you know what you need to deliver on a project and it does slightly shift your relationship with what you're creating. I even find that with music, like, because I'm produce a bit, and then when you've got a deadline, when you've got a thing, it's necessary because otherwise the work doesn't get done.
Yeah.
And you know what you want to deliver. But it's very hard to like have that freedom and like knowing exactly what you need to deliver against, having those restrictions as well, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's nice to be able to have a deadline or, you know, like a brief, because you know it has to get done. Otherwise, I mean, us creatives, maybe we'd never put something out. We're just like, oh yeah, one more month. Oh yeah, one more month. But I feel like when I first started doing music, that side of it, I feel like it was a bit more enjoyable. I'm not saying that I don't enjoy it now, but I think that kind of, you know, that freedom, like if, you know, now you have to answer to like a distributor or people have an expectation of you or something, and that kind of goes away. Whereas when I was banging out mixtapes and like burning my own songs on CDs to hand out in clubs, like no one cared. Who cares when I put something out? Like, so yeah, it's so interesting. Like,
yeah. I was going to ask you something else, but I actually just want to ask about that process of burning CDs and handing stuff out in clubs. Did you literally go up to DJs in the booth and say, this is my record, play it?
Yeah, I was that proper sad person that would plug themselves. So again, yesterday when I was going through these boxes, I found all these CDs that was like Shady track one, Backing track two. And I was like, oh my God, what are these songs? And then one of them was like my first ever official recording that I did. It was this guy I had met on the street in Finsbury Park who used to work in a butcher shop, and he just hollered at me when I was walking past. I stopped and we spoke, and he said he does music, and I said I do music, but I'd never gone to the studio before. And he said, oh yeah, like I'm in a rap crew. Anyway, me and my friend ended up going to their studio in Barnet, and it was like the first time I ever laid a verse down. And they were called, I actually found the back of the CD, not the front, and they were called Flaming Hot Crew. And at the time, I must have been going by Lady Shady, because that's what it says on the CD.
Lady Shady, like, as in Lady Shady or
yeah.
Shady?
Lady Shady. And I was like, oh my God. And I couldn't find the CD. I only had the back of it. And I was proper trying to remember my bars. And I was like, this is so mental. But yeah, I just used to put my tracks on a CD. I used to use the printer at work to print stickers when no one was looking, that had like my MySpace and blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, I just literally used to go up to people and just give them out at like open mic nights and to DJs, and hoped someone would play something on pirate radio. But a lot of the time, that's kind of like my main core fan base initially had come from that, like doing the groundwork and meeting people at open mics. Whereas now everything's like proper social media, so...
It is, but I don't know if you find the same thing. I do find the relationships that I've met with people face to face, even on social media, like they're a different level of invested in you.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like social media, because it's so much in the algorithm and stuff, that like people can be kind of into you, and then you can drop off their feed or their radar or whatever. And like versus people who have actually seen you live, or they seem to be, in my experience, a little bit more dedicated or a bit more invested.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think when people have met you or come to a show, they've kind of attached like an experience to you. So they feel like they kind of know you and they were there, they were part of your journey. Whereas, yeah, you're right. If you don't show up on someone's feed, they might forget about you until you pop up again. But all the live shows that I did, I'm so glad that I was able to build up at the time where, I mean, Facebook and stuff was still happening kind of thing. But I used to run an event for 3 years as well, which was like an open mic night. And people used to come every single month and I used to host. And I feel like if I hadn't done all those open mic events and run poetry events and rap events, like I wouldn't have built as much people to then come to my live show or come to my headline show if I had only relied on social media. Especially I'm someone who kind of like is on social media so much for like 2 weeks, and then I literally won't use it for like 2 weeks, I'll disappear. So it's really weird. I don't know if I would have been able to get dedicated listeners like if I just did social media. And I always think, I don't know if you ever think this, but let's just say, for example, just tomorrow Instagram shuts down and decides not to exist. What are people that only rely on it? Like, what would they do? Like, no one would know where to find you, where to go, how, like anything. Whereas I always try and at least build up a mailing list or use some other thing as a backup, because it's kind of scary that your whole career is based on something that could just go delete by someone else.
I 100% agree. I think the exact same thing. Like Instagram, even your Instagram, it is not yours. It is Mark Zuckerberg and his universes. And it's like being a seller on eBay, like, but you could flip it and be on Depop or whatever. Like,
right.
Anything you do shouldn't be reliant on one channel, which is outside of your control. I completely agree.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, obviously, you've released an album this year, and not to talk too much about the pandemic, but how did you find that period of time affected your writing and your work? Do you feel like you were able to create more from it, maybe? Or yeah, what was the impact of it?
It's so weird, because initially I was like, oh my God, my studio is closed down. What am I going to do? Because there's only one place that I feel comfortable to go and record.
Okay,
I've been literally recording with the same producer. His name's Gadget. I've been recording with him for like 9 years. Like my first ever recording was with him, apart from the Flaming Hot Crew.
Yeah, I was like, oh.
Apart from them, I've literally been recording with him, and he's like a Croatian ex-rock star. He's got nothing to do with the hip-hop scene. So I've always been so comfortable around him. There's like no judgment. He's really experimental. And I've always recorded them. When I've gone to, there's sometimes been like really big producers who have like invited me to their studios and stuff. And I'm just a bit uncomfortable and scared to go, because I feel like I'm a bit shy, and I wouldn't be able to, like Dennis will be like, oh, sing this, do that, go high pitch. And I could be stupid. Whereas just a big producer that I'm excited to work with, I think I'd be a bit like, I can't just do anything here. Like I'd feel a bit like stush. So I'm supposed to be making an album, like, and the studio is closed down. Like, what do I do? And from my youth work job, we were furloughed, but I actually had to like carry on working. So then we ended up doing stuff on Zoom, because I couldn't just let the young people just like have no access to us.
Yeah.
But it gave me a bit of time, like working from home in that sense, where I was like, maybe it's time to just invest in some of my own equipment. So I ended up buying a home studio. I like got bits and bobs. I made Stay Positive socks. I had like my merch line. I sold all the socks and I bought the studio stuff from the money I made from the merch.
That's wicked.
Which was really cool. And yeah, I just started experimenting and learning Logic and just doing stuff at home. So what I was able to do is draft a lot of my songs and experiment on my own. And then I made a lot of progress with that. And then when the studios kind of opened back up, I was able to take my drafts to the studio and then build. So in a way, if the pandemic didn't happen, like if we didn't have lockdown, I don't think I would have actually got it all done.
Yeah, I've spoken to quite a few people who have had that exact same experience. I think if you were able to do that, then it's a really cool thing to have taken away.
Yeah.
The tracks, obviously, a lot of them are really vibey and like high energy. Were you craving that?
No, like literally not at all. I 100% don't miss performing. Like,
really?
It's so weird.
That
yeah,
so interesting.
I don't miss events. I don't miss raving. I literally don't care if I don't go to another festival again. It's so weird. Like, it's so weird saying it out loud like this as well. But I did not miss any of that. And I think I really like realized like how, because I've always thought I'm a bit of an extrovert. And I think I was like, okay, I think I'm actually not. And I just realized how much of an introvert I am. And I just really, you know, love being at home and love being able to just not go out and like just It's so weird. And I don't know if it's because I did so much of it for the past 3-4 years. I was running a monthly spoken word hip hop night. I was hosting club nights with all the girls, literally jumping up and down on stage like every Friday and Saturday. I had my headline show. Then I put two of the all female hip hop tours on where we were like going from city to city, doing festivals, recording and doing youth work and doing radio. And I think I just was like, I'm really burnt out and really tired and run down. And actually doing all of these events and shows, they don't really like feed me like that. Like, I think I just got used to doing it.
Yeah.
You know, like, so now I feel like if I did an event, I would really want to do it. Like, it would be like an in-store for my vinyl stuff or a headline show or like a super big festival that I've like never done. Whereas before I would literally just do any gig, not like any gig, but most of the time.
Yeah. Like most gigs would excite you and you'd be like, yeah, that'll be, that's cool.
Yeah. Or kind of feel obliged as well to do it because it's like, you know, you're a rapper. Your job is to rap and perform. That's your job. So yeah, go and do your job. Otherwise, how can you say how can you be a performer or a rapper? Like, you're not.
Did you think you have a different mindset going into this? This is your third album.
Yeah.
How do you think your mindset's like changed over the albums that you've put out?
That's such a good question. You can proper hear like the journey. Like my first album, A Figure of Speech, it's very personal. And it's like super about, it's like social commentary, like fully. It's about like what I care about, what's wrong with the world, like what we need to do to fix it. A bit preachy, in my opinion, but very personal as well. And then Human Rights, what I feel like was a good balance. Like it had like the hype stuff. It had like deeper tracks. There was like features that were singing on it. So it like felt like a really good body of work. And I think the balance of like subjects was like good. And I took that from Human Rights into this album because I like having a balance because I love grime. I love hip hop. I love UK rap. And I'd never sang on an album before. And I got to play with this album is more fun for me. I was like, I want to be honest. I want to do like, you know, like, for example, Breakup Song is on it, which is like really personal. Rain on Me is really personal. But I was like, I really want to have fun. Like, I want to enjoy making music. And I never had loads of features. My first album had like no features. Faisal, who was Faisal before, he just sang on like one track. So had no features. And then on Human Rights, I had a couple. This one, I was like, I want all my friends on this. I want everyone just to come studio, have fun. Like, let me just be my personality in different sides of it. And it ended up being a good body of work. It goes through a journey. It is very hype. And then it's like hype, like to show off that you can actually rap and have the technical side and all the syllables and that kind of flow stuff. Then it's like super fun and flirty and summery. And then it goes more introverted to finish, like, and goes more in. And I think that's kind of the sides of me that I experienced through lockdown, which I'm sure loads of people, I don't know how was you through lockdown? Did you become like more introverted or did you kind of be like, I want to go and meet everyone?
I think I am. I mean, I think loads of people think this, but I'm a proper like introvert and extrovert. I need time by myself. I need to work on, I work on loads of stuff. I write as well. So I have to have that time by myself, but then I'll take too much of it. And then I'll plan loads of things and be like, I need to see people. I need to go out. Like, I need to party. Like,
to make up for it.
Yeah. So
what's
I found
your star sign?
A Gemini.
Oh,
so, the twins.
Okay. That makes so much sense.
Yeah, I'm a proper Gemini.
You're like, you're literally two people.
I am. So the start of lockdown, I was like having the most zen time, kind of like you. I was really burnt out. Like life had just been really manic. And so did that. And then was like, loving, and then hit a point where I was like, I just want to go out. Like, I really want to see my friends. I miss my friends so much. Like, I want to see my family. So Yeah, but in terms of work and creativity, like, I didn't suffer at all. I found I had more time to actually do stuff, and I did love that. So
did you find after, like, when everything opened up, when you would go out, would you feel so tired, like, straight away? Because I was like, I'd go to one thing and I'd be like, how did we used to fit four more things into the day? I'm so tired.
I have not worked out how, like, the first, like, the idea, you know how going out used to be like, okay, I'm going to this first, then I'm going to pop into this thing, and then I'm going to end up here. Now I'm like, how?
How? You know, they say it takes like 12 weeks to develop habits or drop habits. And it's kind of like that. I feel like we just developed all, like, within that time, because it was a good solid, what, 6 months of something, and we just all developed a whole new kind of personality. Like,
But I've been absolutely loving being out again. I've really been loving it. Like, even going to festivals, going to, like, playing at clubs and just having people around.
Yeah.
I've been like, yay.
You're back in your zone.
Yes, so back in the zone.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code program.
Okay, I really wanted to ask you a slightly different topic, but obviously you mentioned it in the conversation, all-female hip-hop tours. First of all, before we kind of get onto the idea behind that, I was wondering how you think being a woman in a very male-dominated space and genre, what you think the main challenges or implications have been on that for you?
I've been, you know, it's so weird. I've been asked this question a lot, but not recently. And I feel like I have like a better perspective, like having some space from it now, of the problems of being a girl, a woman in that space. And normally I would say like, oh, it's, you know, people's judgment of you, and thinking like most people always assumed I sang before I said I rapped, because girls don't normally.
Yeah, they'd be like, she's, you know, she must be the hook girl.
Yeah, exactly that. But do you know what? To be honest, the main challenge for me that I feel like as a female rapper will slow you down or whatever in a way is selling sex. Majorly, I feel like women who rap are expected to be very sexually open, very provocative in the way they dress and dance in videos, on stage. I feel like if your content isn't about your pussy and the man you can get and you can take someone's man and basically all of that aesthetic, is basically the challenge. So if you sit outside of that, I had a really awkward conversation, I'm not going to name drop, but about 10 days ago, it was literally a few days after my album dropped, so like 3 weeks ago or something, me and my manager parted ways literally the day after my album. Like Yeah.
Like, amicably?
Amicably, 100%. He's so lovely, but a bit unexpectedly, a bit sooner than I thought. But he's like super nice. So it's definitely amicable. It was just a bit of a surprise. And very strangely, a few days later, I had a very well-known UK rap artist manager in my DMs saying, "Why aren't you bigger? I can make you big." I've had that so many times. "Why aren't you bigger than you are? Blah, blah, blah. You've got the look. You can rap. You've got really good rap skills. Blah, blah, blah." And I was just like, because I literally wrote, "Because I'm not a clown." Yeah. And he was like, "Oh, what do you mean? Da, da, da." And I said to him, "Because I'm not going to put on a pink wig and wear lingerie in a video and twerk against the car while I rap. That's not how I am. Like, I'm a big woman. I'm not like a little ute." And he was just like, "Oh, I'm not going to lie." And he works for a very, very, very big brand, like very big label. And he was like, "Oh, I'm not going to lie. Sex does sell, especially with women in rap and da, da, da." And I said to him, "Unfortunately, I know. And like I said, I'm not a clown. I'm not going to participate in entertaining the male gaze to get loads of money. But thanks anyway." And he was like, "Whoa, okay, you're a bit..." He was basically trying to say, like, "You're a bit anti..." like, kind of thing. And I was a bit like, "Well, yeah, because I'm like a little bit sick of these conversations that I have." And, you know, it's just annoying, because it's like, if you... there's only like one or two that can kind of get through, like, you know, like your Little Sims, or like in America you have like Rhapsody or something, but then there's like literally like 50 other female artists I can think of. And unfortunately, unless you have that look and you're rapping about that stuff and dancing a certain way, which like a couple of my friends are like even, literally even have OnlyFans, like, not to do porn, but to just be on OnlyFans, yeah, and have exclusive things and pictures and stuff like that. And they're doing well and I love it and I literally rate them. But if you want to be outside of that, it's like you almost have no choice but to really grind it out independently. Mm. And it gets really tiring, because you're like, "I want to be able to put makeup on, but wear a tracksuit and talk about social commentary or have like a girl power anthem." Mm. And for that to blow as much as me, you know, like just like twerking and, you know, doing the Cardi B, Nicki Minaj route that a lot of UK female rappers have followed that template. And you can see that they're also successful. And then also for me personally, being like a Persian, like Middle Eastern woman who raps as well, it's like, where's your audience? If you know,
yeah, people are like, "Oh, there's a box here and I don't know how you fit it."
Yeah. And I've always noticed that a lot of rappers, if you looked at their audience, the majority of people who listen to them and stuff, apart from when you're at a festival where there's like a mixture of people, a lot of rappers, their fans look like them. Mm. Like, I was at the Burna Boy show a couple of Fridays ago. I took like my young people there, and literally the entire audience, like when he was like, "Who's from Ghana? Who's from Nigeria?" It was like the whole building bar like a few. And I was like, "This is amazing." It's like his people are here for him, you know. As an Iranian female rapper, there's barely like a percentage of Persian girls even in the country for them all to be here, if you get me. Like, if I went to like Indonesia or Asia or the Middle East, it would be different. So for me, it's like my headline show, like my Camden Assembly show, for example, it was like sold out, and there was like literally 12-year-olds with like their grandmas that had come. There was like rude boys in the corner. There was like elder couples from like the poetry world that had come. It was like such a mad mix.
So diverse.
It was so diverse, but sometimes that's not easy to market to and sell to, because, you know, like a label and stuff, they'll sit with me and be like, "Who's your niche? Like, what's your niche audience?" And I'm like, "Humans." It's like, you know, so there's been, it's really, really difficult that I've been through so many moments where I've had meetings and stuff with people and opportunities where they want me to be like more, it's all to do with what you look like and how you are, basically like how you sell yourself sexually. And I'm just like not ever going to do that.
I always think it's people are annoyingly lazy sometimes, and they, to save them having to think too much, they're basically like, oh, this worked for that person, therefore we know it can work again. So let's try and find someone or something that fills into that slot. And so when you are a bit different or you don't tick certain boxes, then it's just too hard work, and there's loads of other people out there. So let's find someone else that does tick those boxes or is more moldable.
Mm.
I find it quite shocking that someone who works at a reputable agency company will say casually, "Well, sex sells," as if that's like an acceptable thing to say and to subscribe to. Yeah, Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B have had huge success, but so have loads of other artists over the years, like Queen Latifah, who never subscribed to that.
Yeah.
And people listen to music, and everything else is part of the package, of course, that people buy into.
Yeah.
But primarily, you listen to an artist for their music. That's the number one thing. So I always think it's strange when all the other layers get put above the thing
100%.
That is surely was where it all started.
Yeah, but that's the thing as well, because like I feel like now there's so many like talented like female rappers that make really good music, but then there's also the ones who they've been and I know it's from their labels, like I know they've been pushed so far into about dance and what they look like and their aesthetic that even the quality of their music from what they used to make 2 years ago is completely changed. It's like super simple, really repetitive bars, really simple production, where some of the artists I personally know that they can rap, like they're really good at barring, but they only get to do it if they record a freestyle or if they just happen to be filmed somewhere and they're rapping. And someone listening to them will just think that's the music they make, that kind of like pop, hip pop sound, and not know that actually that girl can spit, you know. And it's just she's come so far away from that because everyone around is just pushing a look, and that's what's hitting the numbers, and that's what people, social media is visual, so people just want like this visual aid over the music. They might listen to a single once, but they follow the artist because they like what they look like, you know. If social media had no visual, it would be like so different.
The initial nugget that made me want to start this podcast was the people online who would say, well, the real reason for the gender gap is the cream rise to the top, and actually there's no real, like, obviously there's just guys are just, the guys here are better than the girls.
Yeah.
And I think that point that you've exactly hit on is a huge part of it. If we're not gonna let rappers who are women rap, then you're not gonna get best rappers who are women, because they're having to sing half rap kind of on their songs.
Guys never ever have this problem. They will never sit with someone talking to them so long about what they look like, what they're styled, what they're going to wear. Like, you know, it's going to be some sort of jeans, some t-shirt with a puffer jacket. Like, you know, with their chains, that's literally what they have to care about. It doesn't matter what they look like, how much they weigh, if they're muscly, if they have belly fat, if they don't. It's just about their track and who they've collaborated with. And that was a really massive part of me wanting to put the tour together, because I kept seeing these guy rappers on stage and they were bringing out their brethren, like their friends all the time. Oh, here's blah, blah, blah with a verse. And then he'd come up and do that. And I was like, that is so sick. They're like constantly pushing each other and collaborating and stuff. Why aren't we doing that as girls? I had never gone to a female rapper's show where I saw them bring out five other girls, because we're so grinding hard to stand out and to do our thing, because it's so hard to do it that you kind of forget about bringing other people with you because you're just trying to get yourself there right now. So I was like, why don't we do that? Why don't I come out on stage and bring out Tremendous and Bobby Johnson and Ellie and Angel? And why don't I do that in each city? Why don't we all help raise each other's profile? Because no one is seeing that from us. And it was so weird because all the feedback and comments like and stuff that would be underneath would always be from guys. And it would just always be like, this is sexist. What about the guys? What do you mean all female tour? What about an all male tour? And it was like, because all male tours are every week.
Like, yeah, I was like, you just don't need to call it that because you didn't even notice.
Yeah, it's like constantly guys featuring guys on tour festival lineups. We saw it with Wireless 2 years in a row. We've seen it all the time that if you take all the guys' names away, there's three names. Mm. So it's just like, this literally the reason why I did it, because I could have just toured my album with my DJ, who was at the time as well was just a girl. So I was just like, okay, if we're gonna do this, why don't I, instead of me thinking about it and complaining, why don't I just do it and set the example myself? And you never know, in a couple of years maybe another female rapper will do it and bring us on, and so on, you know.
I did that, and I think from a lot of the other work that you've done, just being a music and being in poetry, and as you said, your own open mic night, has that all been part of forming and just a nice community? Because I think that like music is quite a tribal space. The industry can be quite, sometimes you just want to know who your people are.
Yeah.
And I imagine that doing those things and putting other people on has also allowed you to connect and build very genuine relationships with other artists.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like, you know, it's like even having the tracks on the album with like Roxanne is on a track, and then another track has Lioness and Debo, and they were all part of the second tour. So we were all supposed to perform at the headline show, and because that didn't happen, I was like, oh, you know, like, why don't we do a track and this? And they were all so up for it, and it was really amazing. You know, and it's not always all peaches and good. You know, there's been like some of the girls were like really anti being called like female rappers or like female tour, but they wanted the benefits of it. So they kind of also got involved, but then also have kind of backed away from it a bit as well. And, you know, at the same time, it's like people are different. It's not always community, everyone, you know, uniting, but the people who have, that has really filtered and left like a really strong unit. One of my best friends, MC Angel, who's an author, so she goes by Shauna O'Brien.
Okay.
But as a rapper, she was MC Angel, and she's like the first girl to ever put on a lesbian hip hop night in London. She really pioneered all of that stuff, and actually I started running an event with her, and she's the first person who got me into an all-female collective at the time. She had curated a show for Nick Knight's show studio and got me involved. And then she was like, I want us to be an all-female collective. And we did like a show at the Jazz Cafe. She taught me how to be on stage and host. And she's always been about building a community. She used to run a night called Lyrically Challenged at Passing Clouds. And I think if it wasn't for Shauna, I wouldn't have developed this mindset of like building everyone up together, because I feel like when we do build each other up, everybody wins, like 100%. And I've seen it happen. So yeah, I think, and she came on tour, so she was the host on tour. She's an amazing poet, and her book is incredible. It's like her life story. But yeah, she really taught me the importance of, like you said, like music being a tribal space, and that we all should network and give each other opportunities and stuff. And that's kind of like how I've just naturally become now as well.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is, I know you do a lot of work in the youth space, and that means a lot to you. I wanted to ask how you initially got involved with that in the first place, and what it means to you to kind of help bring young people up and through and help them understand how to be entrepreneurial within the creative industries.
I've just volunteered like 10 years ago. I was, this like bus kept driving into our estate that had like studios in the back. Like they'd open the doors and like these decks would come out.
Sick. I need one of them.
It was so cool, man. And I just kept seeing them, and I was like, what are they doing? Like, this is mad. Like, and I went and chat to them, and then they told me what they were doing. And at the time, like there was a lot of boys around my area that were just getting stabbed, like, and getting into fights. It was when like knife violence really started becoming prominent. And I think it's just always been in my nature to try and fix everything and everyone around me. I've just kind of been that way.
And I can see that even earlier when you were like, I thought this needed doing. So I was like, I should do it.
you know, and, you know, sometimes it's definitely like not a positive thing. It's like caused me issues. Like I'm like a really unusual empath and it gives me like really bad anxiety. But yeah, like there was all this stuff happening and I just wanted to help fix it. I spoke to the youth company that had come through on the bus and started volunteering with them and picking up some skills. And then one of my friends at the time, I think she'd seen an opportunity to do a rap workshop with a charity. And I was like, what the hell is a rap workshop? Like what? People actually teach someone else how to rap? Because I had only gone to like one project like that before when I was younger. And I was like, what? So I went to the interview and I got the job. And then through that job, I met like a whole nother range of like artists, educators and stuff that were doing things. And I was like, this is like a real job. This is so weird. So I was freelancing and just doing a lot of bits and bobs. Mm. And then I got a job at Breaking Convention, which is who I work for, as well as doing my own stuff. I just found that it was something I just have always done. It just came really natural to me. I really love it. And I had a really, really hard time like at school and growing up. Like I was always off timetable, at risk, like I was on exclusions and I didn't have the greatest time at school. And I think I related to the young people I was working with and they kind of engaged with me and our programs like really well. And it's just really slowly built up. But I love it more than music. I love it more than running events. I love it more than radio. Like I think if you would do something for free for so long, it is the thing that then after when you get paid to do it. And so I was made the education manager last year. And I feel like for me, that was one of the biggest things that ever happened. Because I was like, rah, this is something that I would actually do for free. It's now a privilege to be like getting paid for it and having an actual job role in it. One of the young people passed away, like literally, he didn't pass away, he was stabbed. So he was murdered a few weeks ago. Another young person outside of the project in South, he was murdered last month. I've worked with people who then I've been told they're not coming back because they've been stabbed. There's a part of you that it's almost like it's really hard to even process it because you've still got all these other young people that you need to look out for and worry about. And all you're thinking is, oh my God, I need to pack more things in the program. Or I need to volunteer more time. So I'm supposed to work 3 days a week. But I'm normally working like 5 or 6 days a week. I just, any other spare time I have, I'm like, guys, let's go here. Oh, we're going here. Let's do this. Because I just don't want them to be in the street or at the wrong place at the wrong time. That side of it is really scary because you feel like they're your children in a way as well, you know? And
you realize that you're now part of their lives and you're gonna have an impact. And you just want that impact to be as good as it can possibly be.
Yeah.
Shady, before I let you go, the final thing I want to ask is, there's a few months left of 2021. What have you got coming up? What are you excited about?
So I forgot I have a whole new EP that I'm supposed to make.
What?
So I got the PRS Women Make Music Fund early this year. And but because everything had been pushed back from my album, obviously that also got pushed back. So it's called The Persian. And I'm literally about to start making that EP now to release early in 2022 or late this year. So yeah, I've got that EP to make. My vinyl for my album right now, that's coming out in 2 weeks. I'm just literally signing and numbering them next week and then I can actually sell them. So I'm hoping to do like an in-store event at a record shop or something for that. So I'll let
That'd be so fun. Yeah.
And then otherwise, I'm just growing my plants and I'm going to try and make some candles because I bought a candle making kit. So I think I might like retire and sell candles next year.
Are they scented?
So I've got like the beeswax, the containers. I've bought loads of different oils that I want to experiment with. So yeah, like the box has been sitting here for ages. I just haven't had time to do it. So I'm really going to try and do that this month at some point.
That would be nice.
Have you made candles before?
No, I've not. I'm like, it's the kind of thing that I mean, like, I love candles though, you know, like they're just so nice.
Where do you normally get your candles?
Normally I ask people to get them for me because they're so expensive.
That's such a good answer. I love it.
Final question. Where are you at on the socials? What are your handles? Where can people find you if they've been listening and they want to check out Shady?
I am at
Lady Shady.
Yeah, Lady Shady. That is so a joke. I can't believe
I love that.
But yeah, at Shady Rap on everything.
What up, Lex?
We keep our eyes on the prize. It's not no surprise. Good women, we're destined to rise. Inspiring, celebrating, uplifting.